With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
John Murphy, Steve Tasker. We're joined on the line by NFL insider Field Yates of ESPN, the host of the Fantasy Football Focus podcast. Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. I get that wrong every week. Field, thanks for joining us. How you doing? Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you guys, as always. Tongue twister, that much is for sure. And before we begin, was either one of you the responsible party for not making Derek Jeter a unanimous Hall of Famer into the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Not me.
It wasn't me. Do you think the guy did it for a reason, hoping it gets found out later on?
I tell you, I tweeted this last night. Baseball Twitter got to the bottom of the Astros trash can banging scandal. They're going to find a way to figure out who did not vote for Derek Jeter into the Hall of Fame this year, and it is not going to end pretty for that individual. I don't want to rob the moment of Derek Jeter and Larry Walker being inducted into the Hall of Fame, but certainly that one stuck out like a sore thumb. Yeah. One out of 397 votes cast, not for Derek Jeter.
Probably some Boston guy. I'm just kidding.
Could be.
Might be.
Hey, Phil, before we get on to more pressing matters, I want to take you back a little bit to the NFC Championship game on Sunday. Steve and I were talking about the game today. I was a little disappointed. I thought the Green Bay Packers did not come out really intense and really fired up to play. And then Matt LaFleur today talks about how his team did not play with its hair on fire against, those are his words, against the Niners. Did you see that game that way? Did you think there was a lack of intensity on the part of the Packers in that game?
Yeah, and sometimes that's a kind of comment you can make when you're looking back on the game and they just got smothered by 17 points. But when the head coach confirms it in his season-ending press conference 3 days after the game, you have to feel like what your eyes were telling you was accurate. And the Packers were going to have to play basically perfect football to beat the 49ers on the road last week. But they came on the opposite end of the spectrum of that. And I was actually surprised the team did not go for it on the opening drive when they had a fourth and short, I believe it was fourth and one on about the 50-yard line. That's the kind of play that if you execute it and you execute successfully, it can create that emotion and that fire that you're referring to right now. I'm not saying the game was lost right there on that decision, but that would have been something that could have kickstarted the Packers, and instead it was the sign of a sleepy day from the Packers basically all the way around.
Yeah, and where do you put that responsibility? Murph and I earlier in the show in the last segment were saying, yeah, that's kind of the head coach's job to set the tempo emotionally for his team. And, you know, and I get it, he's a first-year head coach, so maybe it's one of the lessons, hard lessons he had to learn, but don't you kind of lay that on the at the feet of the rookie head coach?
Well, no question that decision to not go for it on fourth down is that of Matt LaFleur. And I understand the thought process of why you punt the ball. It's let's play the field position game. And at that point, you had just stopped the 49ers on a three and out. But yeah, the emotional energy, it seemed like he was more concerned with the defensive effort than the offensive effort. And whether that's a reflection of the work of Mike Pettine, their defensive coordinator, who, oh, by the way, Matt LaFleur did not commit to for next year. During his season-ending press conference, if you want to read between the tea leaves there about what that might mean. But, it's hard for me to say that it's just one person's responsibility or it's just one side of the ball's fault more than the other, because they got flattened 37-20. And usually when you're talking about a 17-point game, you know it's not close. That one was even, like, if it's possible for a game to not be as close as a score would indicate and it's still a 17-point game, that would be the example of it.
Yeah, and I'm discouraged to read that he's leaving Mike Pettine. He's hanging him out to dry right now. I don't know where you go with that. Does he bring him back now? I mean, he's kind of, you know, let him twist in the wind this week, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't have any reporting or any information about who he might have on his radar if it's not Mike Pettine. That kind of comment is just going to open up a lot of interpretation, or is going to be left open for interpretation. People are going to say, all right, well, are we going to expect an announcement of a new Packers defensive coordinator in the coming days? I mean, this is just dot connecting, nothing more than that. But Wade Phillips happened to be the defensive coordinator when Matt LaFleur was with the Los Angeles Rams a couple of years ago. Wade also happens to be available right now. And Wade, I think, still has a handful of teams left before he's coached for every organization in the NFL. So it feels like he's got to get up there to Green Bay for at least 1 year to try to close that circle. No, more seriously, if he does make a move from Mike Pettine, I would have described it as a move away from Mike Pettine. I would have described that yesterday as a surprise. Now I would not describe it as a surprise based off how he spoke earlier today.
What do you think about this 49er defense? And, you know, I know that you – I agree with you that Green Bay really had to play mistake-free to win that game. Their margin of error was far less than the Niners. But that San Francisco defense, can they make Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs look as bad as they made Aaron Rodgers and the Packers look?
I don't know about that bad, but I think they can certainly stall them out. And I don't know if you guys feel exactly the same way or not, but this Chiefs offense feels about as explosive to me as any offense we've seen since the 2007 Patriots, when they went 16-0 during the regular season, or at least it's in that neighborhood. I know there have been higher scoring offenses since then. Heck, the Chiefs scored more points last year, but still, this offense right now is so, so good. I wonder if, you know, what the Patriots fell victim to in the Super Bowl was the Giants' ability to rush with four men and make Tom Brady uncomfortable. And that's going to be the 49ers' recipe in 11 days, is can we get to Patrick Mahomes consistently with four rushers? And if there's any team in the NFL that can do it, I think it's them. I really do. I think they're the best equipped defense to make Patrick Mahomes not look like a mortal, but at least look like less of a football god than he has over the past 2 weeks in the playoffs, because he has been remarkable. He's done it with his arm, obviously. And then, as we saw last week, in perfect timing with this clip for those that are watching live, is he's running the football so capably. And he may not be as electric as Lamar Jackson or some of the other quarterbacks that are runners in this league, but he's so functional athletically. He's so good in open space. And he's 230, 240 pounds. He's a hard guy to bring down.
We're live with Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, kind of previewing the Super Bowl, which is next week in Miami. Hey, Field, tight ends are going to play a major role in this game, right? Kittle for the Niners and Kelsey for the Chiefs. First Super Bowl to feature two tight ends, each with 1,000 or more receiving yards. I don't know if that's a trend in the league, but it's certainly notable for this game, I think, huh?
Yeah, it is. And I don't know that we've seen players in recent weeks. So last week, Travis Kelce was relatively quiet. I believe it was 3 catches for 30 yards. George Kittle had 1 catch, and yet they were still two of the most important players on the field in the AFC and NFC championship games. They are matchup nightmares in the passing game. And George Kittle, I mean, he's like Lee Smith, right? Like an offensive tackle blocking. He's so, so powerful and physical and explosive at the point of attack. He's a Swiss Army knife for San Francisco because he's powerful enough to handle edge players at the line of scrimmage, but he's athletic enough that he can get out in space and be a blocker at the second or third level. And whereas some tight ends and wide receivers block because they have to, this guy loves it. I mean, that's obvious. We've seen enough mic'd up clips to realize that George Kittle blocks with bad intentions. He mm-hmm. wants to embarrass you. He wants to flatten you. And then the next play, he wants to get up and embarrass and flatten you again. Really a fun player to watch.
Yeah, and we kind of knew about Kittle and how good he was coming into this game. One guy that people didn't know about was Mostert, a guy who bounced around everywhere and was on 6 teams and was released and kind of hung in there. And all of a sudden he gets this opportunity with a team like San Francisco. And yeah, the guy takes over the game virtually. I mean, that. What are your thoughts about where he's going to fall in this Super Bowl 54?
Well, it looks like, yeah, he might be the only running back that the 49ers can truly rely upon, because it sounds like Tevin Coleman is iffy at best after dislocating his shoulder. Matt Breida's had a little bit of a fumbling issue of late. He's so fast and so good in the open field when he gets there. And Jeff Wilson's been solid in the red zone for them, but Mostert looks to me like the most important piece of the running game right now amongst the backs. He's incredibly powerful, and the guy looks, I mean, if you just see him, you can see his clips right now. The guy is cut up, he's huge, explosive, he's powerful, and If you recall, prior to this year, the 49ers re-signed him to a three-year deal worth $9 million, and it basically had nothing to do with his running ability. It was because he was this incredible special teams player, one of the best coverage players in the NFL, and you know, maybe Buffalo fans are used to what that looks like when a guy like Lorenzo Alexander goes from being a special team star to a offensive or defensive stalwart. That's kind of what Raheem Mostert has become for San Francisco. No longer playing on special teams because he's too valuable in offense for them.
Field Yates, our guest from ESPN. He's NFL insider from ESPN. Got next week to talk about the Super Bowl some more, Field, but a couple of issues I want to deal with you right now. This week, the Senior Bowl is going on down in Mobile, Alabama. Look, we know the underclassmen don't go, so the premium picks are not in Mobile this week. So how important is the Senior Bowl for scouts to evaluate the talent when you know that these are not the premium picks really on hand there in Mobile?
Yeah, really, really, really important, and also incredibly important for coaches. A lot of these players, whether they're the best, whether they're second tier, no matter where you size them up to be, scouts have had the chance to see almost all of them at a practice, and probably live in games too. They do all these school visits. They go and they have their time visiting them and interviewing them, and all of these opportunities for exposure. Coaches are, in a lot of cases, just picking up the scouting trail for the year. Right now, this is their first exposure to a lot of these guys. And it's one thing to see a guy on film, but there is something to be gleaned from seeing a player in person or seeing a group of players in person, seeing them perform, seeing what they really move like, what they really look like, how they handle against better competition, how they interact with teammates, how coachable they are, how quickly they learn new concepts. Not that we're, you know, throwing every angle of the playbook up against these players this week, but, you know, there is something to be said for installing a playbook to work with come Saturday. So I think it's really, really important for coaches, really, really important for scouts. It's no mystery that, you know, almost every team is incredibly well represented there, and that's by design.
I was thinking about this. One of next week's Super Bowl quarterbacks, Jimmy Garoppolo, sort of made his mark at the Pro Bowl. He came directly, I believe, 4 or 5 years ago from the other Pro Bowl type game, or the Senior Bowl, from the East-West Shrine game. He played so well that he went to the Senior Bowl in the very next week.
The great lesson for these quarterbacks that are not players like Tua Tagovailoa or Joe Burrow, or even Justin Herbert, who is out of Oregon and regarded by some as a first-round lock. It's just a matter of where he falls in the first round. But some of these guys that are on the periphery right now, Jordan Love, Utah State, an example of a quarterback who could earn a lot of stock this week. Not saying he's guaranteeing himself, you know, a first-round pick if he performs well, but Utah State, he's had some exposure to big-time competition. Utah State did play against LSU this year, and they were obviously the national champion and a great, great team. But it's an opportunity for guys like that to make their mark against better competition. Someone like Jalen Hurts from Alabama and Oklahoma. There are teams that are wondering just how precise of a passer he is. Is he somebody that needs to consider a Taysom Hill-like career arc, where you can play some quarterback, but you're athletic enough, powerful enough, and willing enough to play other spots as well? This week is an incredibly important one for prospects that don't play every Saturday on national television, because the Super Bowl is a great example, to your point, about how it's not just guys that we all knew coming out. It's players that I don't even know if people know where Jimmy Garoppolo went to college, Eastern Illinois, but they may not know much more about the program other than the fact that it's located in Eastern Illinois.
Right. I want to ask you, too, that we've been talking about this wide receiver class. You had a tweet earlier in the week about the last 5 years and the rookies who have led the rookie class in the last 5 years and what their yardage numbers were. There's only three out of the five that actually reached 1,000 yards. Is it tougher for a wide receiver to make the transition from college to the pros than any other position?
I think so. I think it's right up there. And I've heard a lot of smart coaches talk about this, and part of the reason why is the kinds of responsibilities that receivers have at the college level versus the pro level. I think Kyle Shanahan had a really enlightening quote about it not that long ago. And it's just defensively, you're playing different things in college. You're running different route concepts. Your responsibilities are different at the college level. And even the more advanced players in some cases, some of it's just they're more athletic than other players, right? I mean, sometimes you have a guy like Corey Davis, who I still think could be a pretty reasonable player in this league. He went fifth overall for the Titans in 2017 after playing at Western Michigan. He was just a better athlete than everybody else on the field every single weekend when he played. And he's had some bright moments in the NFL, but it hasn't always translated. I think that it's a difficult position to make the leap from. I suppose quarterback's probably always going to be the most difficult one, but wide receiver is right up there. There are so many nuances to the game at the pro level that guys just aren't previously exposed to.
Hey, Field, a couple of other issues today. The Jaguars look like they're going to hire former Redskins coach Jay Gruden as offensive coordinator. What's the chance Doug Marrone is getting close to hiring his eventual successor as head coach there?
It's one of those where when that happens, you kind of say to yourself, like, is he doing this or is the organization making him do this? Don't know the answer for sure. I don't know the answer for sure. I will say that because it cuts both ways. On the one hand, when you hire a guy as qualified as great Jay Gruden in the sense that he's already been an NFL head coach and guided some successful offenses, it's, hey, that's great because we need to win next year. Doug Marrone almost got canned this year. I mean, the team made it clear they had anytime you're announcing that the coach is staying, it means the coach was under evaluation, right? The Bills didn't come out after the season and say, hey, news, Sean McDermott's staying. No, the guy's a stud. Obviously, he's not going anywhere. The Jaguars had to come out and release a statement and say, hey, Doug Marrone is sticking around for 2020. So on the one hand, he's coaching for his life this year. On the other hand, you know, if things go amiss week 7 and they're 1-5, then you might have an obvious replacement right there waiting for you because it's a guy that you hired. So I suppose there's definitely a double-edged sword aspect to this. I think Doug Marrone's focus, though, is going to be, hey, we needed somebody to get this offense right. We've got a huge quarterback decision to make this offseason, and Jay was one of the best minds available.
Well, one of the other things that happened is, you know, one of the most biggest rivalries in sports is the New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys. And it looks like the Dallas Cowboys head coach from this last year may become the offensive coordinator of those Giants. What are your thoughts about Jason Garrett going to New York and calling the plays?
You know, I will say this. Jason Garrett could have easily spent this year away from football. He could have probably retired, to be honest with you. Played the NFL, made a decent amount of money as a backup quarterback. He's been coaching the Cowboys for about a decade. Obviously, you don't earn money on the cheap for Dallas. You make good money as their head coach. He probably could have walked away and never been a part of a team again and just lived his life. And he chose to become an offensive coordinator, which I think is a reflection of the passion he has for the game of football. And it's a results-oriented business. I am so mindful of that because we see head coaches get fired every year, and usually it's between 5 and 8 of them. But Jason Garrett's a man of high character, and I think this would be a good fit for him. A good opportunity to develop a quarterback, do a little bit more game planning and things of that nature. Obviously they had Kellen Moore last year, but they've had a lot of offensive minds, Scott Linehan prior to that, others who have sort of handled the offensive coordinator duties while Jason Garrett was the head coach. So I'm actually a fan of the decision to hire him by Joe Judge, the Giants' new head coach, who gives them another mind that's had head coaching experience. I mean, think about what Sean McDermott did when he brought aboard Leslie Frazier, a former NFL head coach himself, and Sean's more than capable of running a defense, but it also allows him to be the head coach and not have to worry about the defense on some days. That's Leslie. Leslie is more than capable of running that, and I think it's a good sign for Joe Judge that he's already identifying the importance of former head coaches.
Hey, Phil, before we let you go, let me get you involved in our Twitter poll today because you might have some thoughts on this. The Bills obviously looking at everybody at the Senior Bowl this week, and they'll do all of their personnel evaluations. We think they probably need a wide receiver. What's the best way to find a wide receiver? Is it round one of the draft? One of the later rounds in the draft, is it free agency or a trade? And I mean this year more than anything, not just, you know, in general. But this year, what's the best way to add a wide receiver to your roster?
I think it's the first round of the draft for the Bills. And I know I just spoke about how difficult it is to transition, but the team just allocated two significant contracts last year to Smokey Brown and Cole Beasley, and there's no buyer's remorse there. Both guys were really good. That's a lot of money. I believe if I do the math offhand, it's like $16 million a season now for those two guys. They're going to have to pay some players of their own this offseason. We've already been talking about that. Guys are going to do it for major, major raises. I think this first round, though, is deep enough, and the Bills are adept enough at figuring out what kind of player they need. And I'm making it simple, but it feels like one wide receiver with size would go a long way for Buffalo because they've got the speed in John Brown. They've got the slot option in Cole Beasley. And maybe one more perimeter wideout would really make a difference for Josh Allen in his third season.
With this year's class, could they wait second, third round maybe to get an adequate guy there? Or?
Yeah, if the board does not fall in their favor, they could. I mean, it's what, you know, they could. It could go two ways, right? It could be that a Jerry Jeudy from Alabama slips uncharacteristically. And before people tell me there's no way that happens, Calvin Ridley slid to like pick 24 a couple of years ago, and he was a phenomenal player at Alabama. So you could have luck in your favor where a guy falls, or if the run comes early, you say to yourself, all right, well, let's take best available, and then a second-round wide receiver could be more than a sufficient option.
Thanks, right, Field.
Field, thank you very much.
As always, guys, looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.